The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
This is Scott.
This is Pat.
You'll want to stick around for today's program.
Today we're going to talk about why a reverse mortgage may be one of the best or worst decisions you could ever make.
And how to watch out for some of the people that are trying to pitch them to you. Also talk about when's the right time to hire an advisor.
And then how to gift to charities the most effective way possible for both you and the
Not
charity.
Not just charities, but also with your kids, helping with weddings and school costs, etc. You'll want to listen to this week's program.
And now, Barron's Ranked Top 100 Independent Advisors. It's time for Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you are here on this weekend, or maybe you're listening to our podcast. Whatever the case, we're pleased that you're taking some time to invest in your future by listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And we're glad to be here and glad to be talking about things that are of importance to you and your retirement. You know, someone was asking me the other day, said, Scott, how come you don't spend a lot of time talking about the financial markets and that sort of thing? And I said, what do you mean? Well, you know, what the stock did that
like
week.
What it did that week,
yeah,
or that day?
Have you thought about having like a report with the stock? Actually, we used to years ago.
We did. We would get on there and we'd say the Dow did blah, blah, blah. And then this and that.
You know, the fact of the matter is, look, by the time you listen to this, if you really are interested in that information, most of us, it's on our phone today.
And most of us,
news,
it shouldn't be driving a lot of our decision-making anyway.
Well, that was the bigger point I was bringing it. What the financial markets did on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis shouldn't have that much bearing. It was a week or so ago, as I remember listening to broadcast and talking about it. It was a big week for earnings. It was one of the biggest weeks we've had because so many earnings, 200 companies are reporting for the S&P 500. I thought, if people are making long-term investment decisions based upon one quarterly's earnings, I don't know. Well, I just thought I don't know how you would make investment decisions based upon that.
On one quarter's earnings.
Of the S&P 500 as a whole.
Correct,
the 500. You're going to wait to hear the earnings and then you're going to.
You're going to say, okay, we're going to overweight, underweight.
I'm going to sell the market, buy the market. You're going to do
sector
something.
Rotation.
I don't know.
Deflation. But it's hard to deny though, Scott. This is a pretty volatile market. The volatility is.
No, it's not.
You don't, the day-to-day, minute-to-minute volatility, you don't think so?
As a percentage-wise, it's actually been very calm.
Is it me? Well, one day it's up 180 points.
That's less than 1%.
I know that, but then the next day it's down 30, and then it's down 200,
right.
And then it's up.
If you actually look at statistics, been pretty calm. It's actually, it has not been.
But it's been trading. Okay, I'll go with that. It just seems.
Part of it is the numbers get larger.
Yeah. And it doesn't
and,
seem to be any
you're in the industry and know that you know.
Well, I just wake up some more. When I wake up, but I look at it some mornings and I think, this doesn't make any sense. And the next day, this doesn't make any sense.
Hey, you've been doing this 25 years. Of course, it doesn't make any sense on a day-to-day
well,
basis.
Well,
why are you trying to put logic into
well,
it?
I don't know.
That's the irony. You flip on the news and someone sticks a camera in a microphone.
You're going to answer them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why'd the market do this? Well, it's the best option. It's just how you got an answer for it, right?
Yes.
Like, come on.
They put them, well, we did that. The media,
of course,
too.
I know.
Put a microphone. What do you think this is about?
Well,
you can't really say. Well, I haven't got a clue. No one really knows what determines the market over a short period of time. But thanks for the question.
Crowd theory. There's lots of theories there. We can talk about it.
So,
or it's say there's more buyers than sellers.
Well, there's actually the number same. The numbers of buyers and sellers could be different, but the same number of shares trades hands.
Yes. And you could have. If everyone as a group decides something's worth more, it's automatically worth more.
Read
whatever.
Tesla. Read even a lot of companies that are not publicly traded, still privately traded.
Yeah.
Uber, Lyft, all these food delivery companies. Crazy. The little bubble going on in the private equity on the technology side.
There, it's really fascinating.
It really is. Seriously.
It's fascinating.
Uber lost $1.75 billion last year. Uber did. $1.75 billion.
Here's why I think, here's the thing that
valuation
I find interesting.
They think the valuation, depending, it's hard to say because it's not publicly traded, somewhere north of the $55 billion range.
So I travel for work periodically. And even that, I was visiting my daughter in Portland a couple weeks ago. I used Lyft.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I used Uber. So I have both apps, and I typically will go and look to see which one's going to be less expensive and less of a wait. And that's the one I choose.
Okay.
So there's competitive market there. So
very.
You can wonder how a company like that's going to grow into their earnings, but some of these companies, they're still privately held.
Yes.
So the market is not individual investors. The market is other venture capitalists bidding each other up. And it's almost their own little...
It could be their own little bubble.
It is.
Yeah. Great article in the last couple of weeks about Uber and the...
I like the technology.
New York Times. Well, that's actually...
The platform that brings together...
If that was the only part of the company, that would be easy because it's not the technology. It's the recruiting of the new drivers. It's the fact that one out of three drivers doesn't last more than 3 months in an Uber. Can you imagine having an employee turnover?
They're not employees. They're independent drivers.
You can call them whatever you want.
I did hear
an
advertisement on the radio for Uber drivers the other day.
Yeah.
Not Uber drivers. I mean drivers for the company called Uber.
Independent contractors on a non-transportation company.
A technology company that links together people who need a ride and people who have a ride to offer. So, something like that.
Not the same as a taxi, and don't ever confuse the two. As Uber likes to tell the regulators.
Yeah.
What do you mean it's not a taxi?
You got to appreciate some of the gravitas of some of these technology companies. They enter these industries and they think, well, these rules don't apply to us because we're a technology company. We're technology first. The regulators usually find their way in.
Well, naturally, yes. And as they should be regulated or either deregulated.
Either deregulate everything or regulate
it. Of course. You can't let a highly regulated industry like taxis compete with a completely unregulated industry like Uber or Lyft.
Or there won't be any
Lyft.
More taxis.
Or there won't be any more taxis and there's a place for taxis.
Maybe there is. Maybe there's not. Maybe it's all going
to
change.
But it's not fair to the taxi drivers.
Of course not, to leave them out of the equation. To
continue to regulate them.
The taxi medallions in New York City
have dropped by 95%.
No, not that far. At least I heard something. I was following a report there a couple weeks ago. But it's fallen like in about half. And most of the taxi drivers, they were worth about $1 million to get the right to have a taxi in New York City. It was worth about $1 million up until 2 years ago. But a lot of these people had these, they collateralized them. There's one credit union in particular that the majority of their deposits are, their assets are loans that were backed by collaterals of these medallion drivers.
Crazy.
Their kids' college education, et cetera. Now they've got real problems.
Yeah, because the collateral was an asset.
Yeah, really interesting.
An asset. Wasn't even a real asset. It was just an asset. It was a regulatory asset.
It was a regulatory asset.
Yeah.
A regulatory asset.
Yeah, it was a ticket.
Yeah. An entrance. Yeah. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Things can change.
Well, if you'd like to join the show, 888-882-HANSEN. If you've got a financial question for us, 888-882-HANSEN. That's 242-6766.
Yep. And let's start the calls here. Let's go to Denver, Colorado, and talk with Tom. Tom, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Tom. How can we help you today?
Guys, the reason for my call is I'm considering a reverse mortgage, taking the funds out and investing them into retirement 401 funds that I have now.
Well, let's start with a couple questions. Tom, are you married and how old are you and your spouse?
I am going to be 65 in a couple of weeks. My spouse is 55.
And are you both still working?
Yes.
And what's the value of the home?
Right now, its appraised value is $275. Loan on it is $143.
And tell me your thinking behind this. So you want to take these dollars out. You can't put them directly inside of an IRA. You wouldn't be able to put... And the reality is, you're not going to be able to get any equity out of this thing.
Because you've got your loan to pay off.
Your loan to pay off is 143. So you're not going to walk with cash at all out of this.
All right.
If you didn't have a mortgage on it, then you could.
Okay.
And there's special rules around your wife being age 55 as well. Because it used to be that you both had to be at least age 62 to get a reverse mortgage. Now they have some provisions, but it actually makes it harder for you to qualify for a reverse mortgage.
Even if you could, it's not wouldn't
do anything for you.
I mean, it would pay off the mortgage, but I don't. Now's not the time in life to be using that to pay off the mortgage either. Are you still working?
Yeah, they're both working.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, is someone trying to tell you you need to do this, or did you bring this up on your own?
I've been to a couple of seminars talking about it.
And what they want you to do is to take a reverse mortgage and buy like an annuity or a life insurance policy with it? Is that what they're pitching?
Yes.
Goodness gracious.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's absolutely... if you came to me, Tom, and said, Pat, give me some of the worst advice you could ever give.
Honestly,
if you said, and I had, and you got to give me 2 hours to think about the worst advice that I was would ever give. This would be actually, look,
I don't know if it'd be the worst. It'd be up there.
Listen, out of the three worst pieces of advice that I've ever heard about retirement planning, this is one and two. It's absolute garbage. Don't go to any more of those workshops. If you're listening to this radio program, first of all, if someone is promoting a life insurance policy as a retirement plan, run away. If someone is promoting an annuity as an investment option to protect from any downside in the markets, run away. And if anyone ever promotes a reverse mortgage and taking the proceeds and investing it in some sort of a vehicle, run away.
That's why I wanted to talk with you guys first.
Yeah. All right. Glad you called, Tom.
Thank you for calling, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yeah. Appreciate it. I'm going to continue on this because we touched upon reverse. Look, there is a time for reverse mortgages. And they can work wonders for the right people.
They make perfect sense if you have a need, you understand how they work,
and usually a little older, too.
Yes. I wouldn't want to see you do one until you're at least in your 70s.
I had a family member who is around 80 that did a reverse mortgage two years ago. He called me because he called and asked my opinion and my advice on it. And I had a conversation with him. And I said, you know, for you, it makes perfect sense. And then he called me later to thank me, to give him the extra breathing room, and they can work wonders. He was 80.
Yes.
They work wonders if maybe you're older and already have a mortgage and you want to get rid of that mortgage payment, right? So you got a mortgage payment, cash flow is tight, and you think, man, if I didn't have to pay that $800 every month to the bank, I could use that $800 for something else, like going out and meet my friends for lunch once a month or something, right? You know what I mean? That's when it can make a lot of sense. Or if you're in a place, maybe your house is paid off, but you just don't have quite enough income, they can make some.
Now, increase your standard of living, and you don't care what goes on to the heirs, I'm not opposed to them.
Not at all.
But for this idea that you're going to take a reverse mortgage out when you're young, especially when you're young, and you're going to give the proceeds to the person to invest them, it sounds like a whole lot of downside to me.
Yeah, obviously. One of the things, reverse mortgage, we like to think of it, that's the last trip to the well.
It's it.
It should be your final place to go for looking at capital.
Yes.
So you don't want to do this when you're young, and then suddenly you find you're 80 or 85.
And you need it.
And you have no...
But at the same time,
selling your house.
But at the same time, if your standard of living is below and... below what you need, and you don't care what happens to the dollars to your heirs, and that's you. Your heirs care. I've seen people get reverse mortgages where the kids get mad at mom and dad. They say, "Why do they need that?" Why do you need it?
Come That's horrible.
Right? Have you seen it? They're the kid will say, well, my dad got a reverse mortgage. I don't know why. He doesn't need it. I'm thinking, buddy, well, he just spent your inheritance. That's why you don't like it.
Of course, that's why they don't like it. Yeah. So it's interesting. So reverse mortgage is one of those things that you've heard us on the radio program talk about how we hate annuities. Frankly, there actually are some times when they make some sense.
Rarely.
But so often they're misused. And the equity index annuities, I think, are garbage all by themselves. But they're...
How about equity indexed life insurance policies?
Same thing. Garbage.
Garbage.
I mean, come on. That's smoke and mirror stuff.
Yeah. When they talk about the 401k time bomb trap, it's garbage.
What's the time bomb trap?
You're going to pay taxes on your earnings in your 401k, and it's a tax trap.
Not if you plan properly. I maximize my 401k.
I'm not agreeing with their... I maximize my 401k, too. I don't own an index annuity.
I don't own... But, so, there are some times when these annuities can make... There are times... But they're so misused and sold by people that lack credentials, lack other licensing, have limited knowledge of the overall financial industry, that the world would be better off without them. And reverse mortgages are about almost the same way. Because... For the right situation, they could be godsend. Most of the products are it's a government-backed program. It's a program in of itself is a great program, and for the right circumstance, it can work wonders. But when you see them being misused, when you see someone getting pitched...
Well, that's why I asked the question from Tom, which is, did you think this up on your own, or was someone promoting this? He said, I've been to a workshop where someone was promoting this. Because you knew someone had promoted this.
That way they get paid two commissions, I guess. One on doing the...
There's only way they're going to get paid two commissions, which is to get the equity out of your house in order to invest it to get paid the second commission. Bad idea.
There's nothing wrong, and there's nothing wrong with having a home paid off.
Yeah. In fact, we prefer our clients, if they get to retirement age, have their home paid off. If you get there and your home is not paid off, then oftentimes it makes sense to have the longest mortgage possible, so that you have the lowest payments.
But here at Hanson McLean, we don't subscribe to the concept of you've got equity that's not doing anything for you in a home that's paid off.
No.
It's an asset that's paid for that's not hawked. I mean, you don't think that way about other assets. Otherwise, you'd take them all down to the pawn shop.
Yeah, you don't go down to the...
Bring your title on your car down to
the title shop and... take a loan up against it so you could invest in some sort of investment.
Or you don't take your jewelry down to the pawn shop and hawk it unless you need the money badly. And you don't want to do that with your house as well.
I'm guessing you haven't ever been to a pawn shop ever, Scott.
I did, actually. When I was in... Are they still around much?
Yes, sir. There's a show called Pawn Stars on the History Channel.
I saw that once. I didn't understand. Why is that on the History Channel?
I like it.
Really? I remember flipping that on once and thinking...
It is mindless television. People bring down stuff and try to get you to buy it. So you went to a pawn shop when?
I must have been 16 or something. I was in Old Torrance.
What, were you looking for something?
I don't know what I was doing down
there. Were you with
someone? My sister, I think. Was she pawning something? No. I didn't know. I'd never been in one, so I wanted to go in one.
Oh.
I lasted about... a minute, maybe.
It's like a garage sale with a front door on it. Like a pawn stores. I've been in one. I went in one out of curiosity.
I wonder how the pawn business is doing with eBay and everything.
Craigslist, I don't know.
eBay. Because you can just sell your stuff.
I'm actually not going to do any research.
All right. We need to get moving off this topic. Because if you're listening to us, not because you want to hear the lack of knowledge that Pat and Scott have about the pawn
industry. But I do want to talk about something. It ties back into what we just talked with Tom, which Tom was talking about getting a reverse mortgage on his house. I guess one of the bigger questions was, does it make sense for you to downsize in retirement?
Well, that's what I tell you. You look at the percentage of people that are looking at downsizing or have downsized. And here at Hanson McLean, we've worked with thousands of people at retirement, and we've seen every situation you can imagine as far as sometimes people downsize, but they don't... The home values go up after
close to 50% of all transactions after the age of 50, close to 50% of all real estate transactions take place with people over the age of 50, which would make
half
sense.
Half of them.
And it's estimated that at least 40% of those are people that are downsizing, or that means physically moving to a smaller location, or downsizing to a less expensive place to live with a bigger or same size house.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that. I mean, for
especially with
California.
This radio show runs in Sacramento, Denver, and San Francisco. By any measure, two of those are very, very expensive to live in. Very, very expensive. And the Sacramento area is just expensive relative to the rest of the United States.
Well, the Bay Area is, come on.
Oh, it's out of control.
So we clearly see a lot of people that they've got $1 million home that if they moved that even to different parts of California, it could be worth $300,000.
Yeah, or moved it to the outskirts of Reno, Nevada, where there are huge communities that are being built, or Arizona, or Oregon, or Idaho. Big recipient people leaving both the state of Colorado and the state of California. So what should you think about?
And we have on our website, HansonMcLean.com, we have an article on this topic on things to think about when deciding whether or not to downsize in retirement. So that's the things that we talk about. And one of the first things is, what's the current state of the housing market?
And what's the current state of the market that you're looking to move into? So not just your own market, but the market you're moving into. So is it good? Is it flat? Is it down? And is it good? Do you wait much longer, or do you pull the trigger now? Because if it's really good, it may not remain that great forever.
Yeah.
How much of the home do you actually own? What's your equity in the home? Right? If the home's worth $1 million and you owe $500,000, obviously you own half the home. Who owns the other half?
Well, the bank, obviously.
Yeah. Well, probably not a bank.
But you know, it's interesting on this whole...
probably a bond.
Okay, whatever. You know, servicing agents. The servicing agent, and then,
and then the money's
pooled up somewhere.
27 different places.
Go watch, what was that movie when you've got Serena?
The Big
Gomez.
Short.
Yeah, Serena Gomez. What, Serena? Selena Gomez explaining how.
Was it The Big Short? It was The Big Short?
The Big Short.
The Big Short.
Actually, I'm not necessarily recommending that
movie. That was a great book, though. I didn't care for the movie. Where would you consider moving? Healthcare should be a driving factor as to where you actually should consider moving.
That and family. I think family's bigger.
That is true. I'll go with that.
But last week, talking to a client of mine, she's been retired. Her husband retired 8-9 years. And she had stopped in the office doing something. And she was talking to her about, I said, where's your husband? She said, he's home with the grandson, 2-year-old grandson. And so we chatted a little more. And I said, how do you watch the kid every day? Oh, just during the week, during school hours. And I said, this is like a full-time job? Yeah, pretty much. But when we go on vacation, then they're on their own. So she shared with me about this and how much she is enjoying this time with her grandson. There's not a chance in the world that this woman
would
want to move away from her 2-year-old grandson. That is a huge priority. So when you're going through all the financial planning, I mean, the finances are part of it.
Yeah, part of it is friends and family.
Some people wouldn't want to be that close to the...
But others, it's friends and family hold a very, very important part of your life.
So there's a lot of things to think about when you're looking at if you're going to downsize. Go to our website, HansonMcLean.com, if you want to read more about that article and have some things. Also, as you're doing some of your research for retirement, most people, if they're asked, don't know how much they need for retirement. They don't know how much cash they need set aside. They don't know how much income needs to be replaced.
They don't know where the income is going to come from.
That's why I want to encourage you to attend one of our workshops. If you're nearing retirement, going to be retiring in the next year or two, you'll want to come to one of our workshops. It's an 75 minutes. You'll learn something. 99% of all attendees have said they've learned something that helped them towards their own retirement. So we've got these the week of May 9th in Sacramento, the week of May 16th in both the Bay Area and Denver. For more information on them, go to HansonMcLean.com. You'll get all the details. They're free. You can register. We hope to see you there. We're taking a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Two guys, two brains, and one head of hair.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
If you would like to be part of our program, want to join us, I'd love to take your call. Most likely would like to take your call. It's a good call.
Most certainly we will probably want to take your call.
Most certainly we'll probably want to. To join us, 888-2-HANSON. It's 888-2-H-A-N-S-O-N. 888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And
before we go to the calls, a number of weeks ago, Scott, I was telling you how I was trying to, that I felt that I was kind of failing my teenager as a parent because I wasn't teaching them to do enough chores around the house, like handyman sort of stuff. So,
okay.
I have been, about every other weekend, I have a large list of things that need to be done around the house.
All right, continue.
So, and remember, I have a 16 and 18-year-old still at home. I finally came to this realization. And it was probably because my two older children would actually help me around the house. I didn't have to fight with them very much to get them. But these boys are onto the program now. We got the list. So I'm with them on last Sunday, and I'm like, okay, we need to do this and this and this.
What are you doing?
Recocked the bathrooms, painted the...
You're doing this.
No, I'm doing this with them, but they don't want me involved at all. So what it's now gotten to is you have to watch a YouTube video about how to caulk the bathroom because my 18-year-old...
You don't know how to caulk a bathroom.
I know how to caulk a bathroom. What do you think I grew up with? What silver spoon family did I grow up? And I've certainly know how to caulk a bathroom.
To make it look good. How's that?
Yes, I believe that it's structurally sound. So my point being... My 18-year-old, I said.
But you're not doing this out of economic reasons or because you think you can do a great job.
There's a little economy.
I've worked with you for a long time, Pat. This is kind of a new part of you. I don't know if it's an age thing, a midlife kind of thing that you feel that you're now going to start doing the home projects yourself.
Because before my oldest son was pretty good at that stuff. He didn't mind doing it. We would do it together and we would get right through it. But these kids... I don't want to do it. So my 18-year-old, we did it. 3 hours later, everything's done. And I said to him, hey, you guys did a really good job. It wasn't that hard, was it? And my 18-year-old said, well, the emotional stress.
There we go.
Was much harder than the physical activity of actually doing it. And I said, so.
Was he kidding?
No, he wasn't. So I said, because what you just said to me is that you're spent all that time to talk your way out of it or to somehow convince me it didn't need done and that...
I'm going to... No.
What's that?
I am on your son's side on this.
Okay.
Okay. My wife... And here's why.
Okay.
It's funny. We're very fortunate to live in a Western society where we have options in this great country of the United States where we can say, what are we passionate about? What are our skills? Where do we want to invest our time? And many of us can find careers, livelihoods, and have wonderful lives mm-hmm. doing things that we're good at. Not all of us, some people, but, right? So my wife, it was a few months ago, had me do something around the house. I was so frustrated. I was angry. I said, please, never ask me to do this stuff again. Please, never. I can't stand it. It drives me crazy. I don't like it at all. I don't like how it makes me feel. I don't want to do it. 2 weeks ago, I'm visiting my daughter, and she's got the cheapest dresser she bought, I don't know where this thing came from. IKEA was like, that was a Cadillac compared to the thing that she got. But I'm not going to spend money on for a couple
years.
So you
go get a new dresser?
No, I wasn't going to get a new dresser. But one of the drawers won't go in because something's broken on. And my wife wants me to look at the thing.
Oh, you fix it.
I said, I'm not going to. And we got in this bit of an argument over it. My daughter didn't want me to touch it either. And then my wife's then monkeying around, and then one of the other drawers didn't work right when my wife was done. But I was one of those things I thought,
but Scott,
if I do this?
Well, you don't have to do it.
But
my 18-year-old son isn't earning nearly the dollars
that
you are.
When I was 18, I was dragging brush for a tree trimming business.
That's right.
Or pulling weeds.
That's
or
right.
Or painting fences.
That's right. That was my point.
I was working my tail off.
That is right.
I still do. I just do it on things I enjoy to do.
And that's why I wanted them to touch up the outside of the house and paint the gutters, do some grouting. So the saga continues. I'll keep you posted on how my relationship continues with my two children.
Pat and the household. Years ago, we did a segment on the program here. It was Pat's teenage jobs, and he's had a number of them.
I probably have had 30 or 40 of them.
40? You can't have had 40 jobs.
Oh, I certainly could. Some only lasted 2 or 3 hours.
Okay.
I'm going to sit down with my brothers one day, and we're going to write a list. There were jobs that took place in the house, and then there were jobs that were...
What do you mean the house?
Well, like, I had a job one Thanksgiving. I was buying all these poinsettias through a wholesale florist and then selling them on the street corners. We were selling them.
Did you have a permit for that?
No, we didn't have a permit for that.
Anyway, all right, we're way off topic on this Hanson McLean's Money.
All right, we're going to take, we're going to go to the calls. If you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-242-6766. And let's talk to Dave in Northern California. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
Howdy.
What can we do for you?
I have a question that probably a lot of people have, and you might have answered this recently. I don't always get a chance to listen to your show, but concerning, I'm hoping you can explain how financial advisors charge for their services and perhaps suggest some alternatives to what I'm doing with my retirement funds to possibly avoid some of these, since I don't really take that much out of my funds.
Okay. So... Let's start with this premise. Just tell us what you're doing now. And I agree. I couldn't agree more. Just like the conversation we just had where Scott says...
I'm not doing any home pro. I find it frustrates me. And
right? And you're not very competent at it. So much like that...
And I can see it.
Much like
incompetency.
That, some people are competent at managing their own money and doing their own financial planning, and they should be doing it. Some believe they're competent and they're not competent and they should not be doing it. And some, it's a combination of the both. And the cost is always, always, always a factor.
So let's answer the question and then we'll delve a little. So here's the typical ways you'll pay for a financial advisor. Okay. The old school way, traditional way, and what still a lot of brokers operate under is a commission basis where someone sells you a financial product and you pay them a commission, or they sell you a product out of their inventory and you have a markup on it. So if you bought a bond from a local hospital bond, for example, that your broker had, you might not pay a commission, but you paid some markup and the broker has an inventory of different products to sell you. And he or she is going to sell you the products that they have. Many financial advisors today operate more on a fee basis. And with this, oftentimes you'll see financial advisors will charge a percentage of the money that they manage. So, for example, they'll charge 1% to manage a portfolio of a variety of different types of securities. Sometimes you'll see a financial advisor that will charge an hourly fee or a fee for a particular project. Fee arrangement, it's more rare, I think, in financial services, but sometimes you'll see that. Those are the primary ways that a financial advisor gets compensated, that if you choose to hire a financial advisor, you'd pay them. One of the things I always say, look, the least expensive way to do it is to avoid any financial advisor and just do it yourself with a discount broker like E-Trade or Schwab or one of those. It may or may not be the most profitable long term, but it would be clearly the least expensive way to do it. So tell us your situation.
Okay, well, I'm a little further along. I'm probably, I'm in my late 60s, already retired, and probably take out about $15,000 a year out of my approximately $750,000 that's there. That's about all my wife and I need. We've been retired for about 2.5 years and find that we can live off of Social Security and the $15,000, and we still have a little money left over at the end. So at the end of that, year, looking back at the charges, they, like you said, they're probably around 1%, which is still $9,000 or so dollars, and after I would love to not take out any more than I need to, and possibly leave that to the kids and grandkids. But
So you're paying an advisor now.
Correct.
So the question is, if let's say you didn't have the advisor, how would you invest these dollars?
Well, that was my question to you. Possibly, what is there a different alternative to paying the roughly $9,000
yeah.
a year?
Okay. There are. You could do it yourself. But the problem with doing it yourself is I have no right. Unless you have experience doing it yourself.
And that advisor may or may not be adding more in value than the $9,000.
Yeah, correct. So has the advisor talked about converting some of this IRA over to a Roth IRA?
No, most of it. The IRA that I have is pretty small.
Okay.
The Roth I have are a little bit larger.
Got it. So not all this money's in an IRA.
Correct.
Okay.
Vanguard. And so, I mean, I think it depends on what this advisor is really doing for you. Vanguard had a study out that it shows that an advisor can add up to about 3 percentage points. This is Vanguard, the low cost, up to 3 percentage points as far as additional value. Some by the right kind of investment, some by keeping clients invested during various market cycles, some through the financial planning process. So whether or not you are receiving that value, I don't know by knowing your own situation, but I think sometimes an advisor can just...
But if you don't have a background in managing this money, what would be your alternative?
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, that's what would scare me. If you said, hey, listen, I'll share a story with you real quick. I had a gentleman... came into my office that had been managing his own money for 35 years. I looked at this portfolio. It was fine. He was a rocket scientist. He was highly educated. He understood the investments. He said, tell me what you think. I looked at it as I said, it's fine. He said, I want to hire you. I said, why? You're doing fine. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and I want to make sure that there's an advisor here for my wife if I'm no longer here. That made sense. But he didn't need me for that portfolio today. But, I bring my car to a mechanic? Sure. Could I possibly do it myself? Possibly. But I really don't know what I'm doing when it comes to working on a car. And that's the question you got to ask yourself is, what would the alternative be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I hope that helped.
I appreciate the call.
And I know it's hard sometimes, but because you're just looking at one piece of it. And one of the things I often looked, I mentioned this, maybe it was last week's program. I think one of the greatest values that we as a firm, anyway, Hanson McLean Advisors, is keeping people from making mistakes and helping them understand where the pitfalls are in their strategy, where the risk lurk in their portfolios that they may not otherwise see. Because most people are more concerned about not going broke,
than they are about
concern,
getting rich, right? I want as much as possible to go on to the grandkids, but I don't want to
be a good steward of these. I don't need a lot of money. You're probably at the point in life thinking, new possessions certainly don't tickle your fancy, and you don't need, you don't need a bunch of extravagant experiences to enjoy your life. So you're like, I don't need much income from my portfolio. But you want to be a good steward with it. And maybe you're being the best steward you can be by having this advisor.
Yes. So appreciate the call.
Yeah, I hope that helps some, Dave. And I know it's...
And Scott, you use the term tickle your fancy like this show is being done in the Victorian era.
Why is that Victorian?
Tickle your fancy. Does it not sound Victorian era? All right, but that's
I don't
enough,
know what... That's enough of the, we were talking about a few hundred years ago, Victorian era. Is that where the term came from?
I'm going to look it up after the show, but we're going to go to the next segment of the show.
All right. Well, yeah, actually, this part of the program, we're going to go to Real Advice. Real Advice is when we talk with a real-life financial advisor at Hanson McLean, and hear that something happened.
Where they helped a client?
Yeah.
Went through a situation with a client? This may not be reflective of your experience with a Hanson McLean advisor, but... nonetheless.
Nonetheless. So we've got David Schauer is with us today. And David is the Chief Investment Officer for Hanson McLean. Actually, David's been with Hanson McLean for 18 years. He's a certified financial planner, a chartered retirement planning counselor, and a chartered financial analyst. So he's got more
initials after his name than he does in his name.
I think so. So
how many does he have? I'm going to do it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 13
And he's got a, also a master's in something, financial something.
Oh.
Or something financial. David, welcome to Hanson McLean.
Thank you. Good to be back.
You don't have a doctorate in finance, about, though.
No, no. Gosh, no.
You
but, I'm thinking about looking at one in Victorian history.
Man, funny guy. Funny guy. All right. Now tell us a little bit about their client and how you were able to help them, what their situation looked like.
Sure. So this was a new client, and they were in the process of retiring and just kind of going through that whole process with them of understanding their situation, kind of talking a little bit about their grown children. One was working, but their income tax bracket wasn't real high, and the other child was just out of school, not working at the present time. But both were filing their own tax returns, and they had been making some gifts to charity. So when we kind of unpacked all of this, determined that they were making all these gifts in cash. And in looking at their portfolio, they had some highly concentrated positions that were had appreciated greatly. And so we determined in looking at their kids' tax situation, their tax situation, and the charity that they had been gifting to, that they should be gifting to all parties, both kids and the charities, in kind rather than in cash. The
David?
Basically paid no taxes on the – yes, go ahead.
Were they working with an existing advisor that just sort of missed this, or were they doing it themselves?
They were doing it themselves.
So can you briefly walk through with the listeners why one would want to gift an appreciated asset either to any individual, it doesn't have to be a family member, or
sure.
an appreciated asset to a charity versus not?
Sure. So once you, when you purchase a stock or a mutual fund or an ETF and it appreciates, you're going to owe capital gains taxes on the difference between the cost basis, what you paid, and the market value. If you hold the asset longer than a year and you gift that to a charity, the entire amount of the gift is deductible for you, and the charity can then sell the security, realize the entire amount as a gift to them without any tax implication. With the kids
and this,
were in
and
a,
this, and, you know, I think sometimes people hear that and think, well, that's if you gift a lot. Look, if you give $1,000 a year.
$1,000 a year. Let's say you bought
correct.
A stock for $500 and you gave it to a charity when it was worth $1,000, right? You get to deduct, which means lower your taxable income by $1,000. And the net savings to you by doing that could be $200 to $300 versus just gifting them cash.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so
it's not only ultra high net worth people.
That's right.
Not at all.
Yes.
Not at all. And then the next step was they were gifting to their two children. One was for a wedding and one was to just help with some school-related expenses that they had had. And they were gifting really the maximum they could gift in a given year, so $14,000 each to each child. So we determined that gifting the stock, which once again was highly appreciated, which they would owe capital gains taxes for both federal and ordinary state income taxes for California, we were able to gift it to both children, and the children paid zero income taxes on it because of their own tax situation. So it worked out exceedingly well.
Did these people? Did these people want to reduce the amount of that highly concentrated position?
Yes. They realized it was more than they should have. One in particular was pretty speculative, but obviously the tax implications was kind of making them reticent to actually make that change.
Yeah. And if they,
so we did it for a couple of years in a row with the kids, as well as the charity.
Sounds like everybody win except the tax man.
Correct.
Yeah.
It was very profitable for all involved.
Well, appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Thanks for sharing the story, David.
And David, how old were these people approximately?
They were early 60s.
Okay. And were they working or retired? Or
retired.
Yeah. Okay.
Both retired.
And recently retired, or they were sort of in the
recently retired, being the last year and a half.
They came to us during that retirement process, the retirement planning process. So they actually became a client. You worked with them. So let's just get this straight. You worked with them prior to them becoming
retired.
Retired, and then they became a client.
And then there were some health issues that precipitated the retirement earlier than they would have liked. But yes, I had met them probably 10 years prior.
Okay, so you've been with us for a long time, David. You've worked with hundreds and hundreds of clients. Mm-hmm. The firm has 4,000. Out of curiosity, ask the question.
So you met this person like 10 years ago, you said?
Roughly, yep.
Roughly. And when did they become an official client of Hanson McLean?
Late 2016.
So you worked with them for eight or nine years before they actually physically opened up an account with us?
Yes.
Okay. What percentage of the people do you meet with? And that's how we like to, for the rest of the listeners, that's how we like. We like to meet with people prior to retirement.
Yeah, so we can help them
plan.
So
we can help them plan.
Right, of course.
Right? Even if we don't get to manage, even if we don't manage the money.
People come in, like, after the fact. I retired last month.
Because the sooner we get working with you prior to your retirement, the better the planning, the more we can help. David, what percentage of the people that you retire do so prior to the time they thought they would, either because the job changed or their health changed or something in the family dynamic changed?
Yeah, I'd say probably 25%.
Okay. I would have guessed it was more than that.
Well, statistics.
I'm being a little conservative. My mind went to a third, but I'm thinking it doesn't seem quite that high, but somewhere between 25% and 33%.
All right. Appreciate that.
All right. Thanks, David.
All right. Appreciate thank you.
All right. Interesting that they met 10 years prior, and it's, look at retirement. We've talked about the show. Retirement's it's changed, but I recall one of the first clients I had, and I met him. He was mid 70s at this point, and he was on. He was had been widowed and had been married to a different woman at this point, and he was sharing with me a story that he was. He and his wife had always talked about traveling. It was one of the things that were on their bucket list. Always wanted to travel. And they didn't do it until he was retired. For whatever reason, they never bothered taking the time during his working years.
Until he retired.
Their very first trip, she gets ill on the flight towards Europe. They land in, I think it was New York, somewhere back in the East Coast, probably New York. They never made it on the trip. She becomes ill. Several months later, passes away.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, it's awful. And I think the reason I'm bringing it up, it's
why are you bringing this up?
Because there's I see sometimes people put off until retirement that retirement's going to be this some stage where
like
your life is totally different.
Like you throw a switch and it's just going to be different the very next day.
Things will be different. You're still going to be there.
Yeah, you're going to be the same person in retirement as you were working.
Yeah, so if there's certain things that are of real importance to you, whether it's a travel or whatever it is, really, I think the point kind of here is maybe you don't wait to retirement, or maybe you figure out
how to do it a little bit while you're working and a little bit while you're retired, maybe work a little bit longer.
Even if retirement's delayed a bit.
You have to prepare. You have to prepare for a retirement, even if you don't plan on it. Because I
looked at a study this last week, according to the study, roughly 10% of Americans have a solid plan for retirement. Roughly 10%. Nine out of 10 are approaching retirement blindly. And listen to this study. This is from Economic Policy Institute, whoever they are. I don't know. Anyway, that's who did this report. But the fact is these numbers are pretty accurate. The average retirement savings for the age group between 50 to 55 years old, average across America, savings for 50 to 55 year olds, $124,831, $125,000. Okay, the average savings. That's the average. If you remember back
from
our math.
That's the average. If you remember back to math.
That adds Bill Gates in there, right?
Yeah, he throws it by a couple percentage.
So if we look at the median, the midway point, the median is $8,000.
Which means half of the people,
50 to 55 have $8,000 or less saved for retirement.
Do you know what's going to happen?
Yeah, the other half are going to help supporting that.
Yeah, the people with less than 8,000.
Which means it's all the more important that for you to be prepared for retirement, which is why we are having a series
nice
of our
segue.
Workshops. So we did, this is the third time we've done a series of workshops this year, this calendar year. And the reason why is because we have a lot of people coming to them, and people say they like it.
Yeah, so 99% of the people that attended said they learned something that helped them in their retirement planning.
Yeah. So the week of May 9th in the Sacramento region, there are three different workshops in the evenings. Okay, so that's...
Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 11:15.
That's just this next week in Sacramento. And then the following week, the week of May 16th, in the Bay Area and in Denver, we have four different times. So in the Bay Area, we've got in Tuesday night in Emeryville, Wednesday night in Palo Alto, Thursday night in Danville, and then Saturday midday in San Jose. That's the week of May 16th through 20th in the Bay Area. And then in Denver, again, that same week, May 16th, Tuesday in Colorado Springs, Wednesday in Cherry Creek, Thursday Broomfield, Saturday Highlands Ranch. So a number of workshops coming up.
And you'll learn exactly how much money you're going to need in retirement and where it's going to come from.
And again, in Sacramento, it's this coming week. Go to HansonMcLean.com. HansonMcLean.com. You'll get all the details on the workshop. There's no charge for it. I really think you're going to be glad you went. I don't know. I haven't talked to anyone who's regret going, so please go. Anyway, the music means we're out of time. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.